Welcome to the July 2026 News Bulletin podcast for yacht and small craft marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear member and fellow maritime professionals, the IIMS Annual General Meeting 2026 was held on the 2nd of June. Often rather dry events, an AGM is a vital part of what any institute or association does once a year. It was a great opportunity to inform and share the many activities being undertaken by IIMS with an engaged online audience. My thanks to all those who voted this year. Looking at our records, we logged the highest number of votes in memory, and especially to those who took time out from their busy schedules to join us online as we broadcasted the event live from IIMS HQ at Murrell's House. The management board, many of whom were at Murrell's House in person, were joined by the IIMS team along with nearly 80 other members online. As I prepared my CEO report ahead of the AGM, it gave me the chance to reflect in depth on the work of the Institute over the last period. There were a couple of highlights in particular I shared with delegates that I want to mention again now for those who were unable to attend. Firstly, IIMS has paid off the mortgage on Murrell's House, which means we now own the real estate outright, an asset that is estimated to be valued between £800,000 and £1 million. This extraordinary achievement gives me huge personal pride when I think back a dozen years to when I started and how challenging our financial position was then. We have come a long way. To have achieved this still seems unthinkable, and without doubt ranks as one of my proudest accomplishments as CEO. It sets the Institute up financially for the future. The second matter of importance is to inform you about two Lifetime Achievement Awards that were announced and presented at the meeting to two stalwarts and veterans of the Institute. This was one of new president, Mike Proudlove's, first formal duties, and we managed to spring an unexpected surprise on Captain John Noble, who was at the meeting in person. Sadly, John Heath was unable to be present at the event to receive his award. Both men have made not only an outstanding contribution to the maritime sector over half a century, but they have also served IIMS with distinction for many years. It was great to see both individuals honored and recognized. See elsewhere in this news bulletin for photographs. The good news continues to flow following what proved to be a rather hectic and chaotic June. IIMS exhibited at this year's SeaWork exhibition, Europe's largest workboat show, held at Southampton from the 9th to the 11th June. It is an event we really do enjoy being part of. Meeting members and other industry personnel is something I very much enjoy, and this year's event proved to be the best and most productive I have attended. Sharing space on the Workboat Association stand, our booth was constantly busy. I was delighted to catch up with so many students, industry friends and colleagues, including those from our competitors too. I have devoted space to this event elsewhere in this news bulletin. Following immediately in the wake of SeaWork was our annual ISO 9001 audit. This year, we decided to extend the scope of our existing certification to bring the IIMS certifying authority into scope. This meant the audit turned from a one-day event to a two-day event. My thanks to General Manager, Camilla Robertson, who also wears the hat of Quality Manager, and to Dave Parsons, who manages our Certifying Authority Department, both of whom were influential at the audit conducted by DNV auditors. The outcome is that I am delighted to report the existing scope and extended scope have been approved for certification with no major and no minor non-conformities. This is a significant achievement indeed. As we enter the second half of 2026, I want to draw your attention to the high number of incidents and accidents we have seen, many resulting in fatalities sadly. I know to some, I will sound like a broken record, but as we start to prepare and collate edition 6 of the IIMS Safety and Loss Prevention Compendium, I have to say I am shocked at the continuing high level of loss of life and the sheer number of maritime assets impacted and lost. Of course, highlighting the issue that the industry continues to face is not of much help on its own. Action is needed. What bothers me and is most troubling of all, is the repeating nature of some of the incidents. Deaths in enclosed spaces is one such example. Accidents in enclosed spaces continue at an unacceptably high level. 3 more dead in one incident last month alone. Why can't we learn and understand from previous accidents? Is it a lack or training? Complacency, lack of common sense, or just a feeling of it won't happen to me? I wish I had the answer. Sticking with the theme of enclosed spaces, I have always been skeptical about remote surveying in general, but the work of Bureau Veritas Marine and Offshore is causing me to think again. Their remote inspection technique uses drones and UAVs operated on board by trained surveyors to inspect hazardous confined spaces like ballast tanks and cargo holds, reducing the need for direct human entry. This approach is designed to improve safety and efficiency compared with traditional inspections, which often require multiple personnel entering high-risk environments. BV estimates RIT can reduce confined space entry risks by 60 to 70%. Now this really is progress, and keeping people out of those spaces can only be a good thing and will save lives. Hurrah! Survey well, Mike. For our first story, IIIMS is delighted to announce the launch of its latest handy guide, authored by experienced surveyor and large yacht specialist, Captain Phil Duffy. What a marine surveyor needs to know about surveying large yachts aims to be practical, helping the reader to prepare, conduct, and document surveys efficiently while ensuring the safety of people and assets. The handy guide extends to 152 pages. The paperback edition is available at £40 plus post and packaging, or is a PDF at £37. For more information and to purchase a copy, visit our website. For our next story, we are pleased to announce IAME has accepted IIIMS as a member. IIIMS is recognized the world over as a leading provider of marine surveying training and education. To further align with the Institute's education aims and aspirations, IIIMS has joined and become a member of the International Association of Maritime Institutions. IAME is a global network of maritime training and education providers that delivers training across the maritime sector in merchant navy, superyachts, towing, restricted waters, tonnage, and fishing industries. IAME provide network meetings and conferences to enable our members to collaborate to enhance and expand their training portfolio. IIIMS has attended the first regular meeting online and will have in-person representation at the IAME annual conference, which is scheduled to take place in Liverpool, UK, on the 22nd of October 2026. Next, the UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch has released its final report into the grounding and loss of fishing vessel Crystal Stream last year. A safety warning was also issued after it was found that the watch alarm in the wheelhouse was not connected to the autopilot and was not operating at the time of the accident. At just after midnight on the 6th of June 2025, the UK registered prawn trawler Crystal Stream, LH147, struck an underwater obstruction near Barmore Island, Loch Fyne, Scotland. Shortly afterwards, the skipper intentionally beached the vessel on the rocky shore, where the crew abandoned to a life raft. Crystal Stream was later declared a constructive total loss, and the vessel was broken up and removed from sight. Safety issues include the following. The skipper, who was the lone watchkeeper at the time of the grounding, was highly likely fatigued due to their schedule in the week before the accident. The vessel's safety management was inadequate, failing to address key operational areas including navigational practices, risk assessments, and crew medical fitness. Crystal Stream's crew did not receive an induction on joining, and the lack of regular drills resulted in them being unfamiliar with the vessel's life-saving equipment and emergency procedures. The MAIB also published a safety flyer alongside the report with safety lessons to the fishing industry about the dangers of lone watchkeeping and fatigue. You can read the full report and safety flyer via www.iiims.org.uk/news. For our next report, the European Commission has recently published an interpretation note on the customs and VAT rules applicable to pleasure craft. This document has been awaited for several years by pleasure boaters and yachting professionals. It provides a number of important clarifications on the customs status of vessels, controls, and returns to the European Union. While the text is still incomplete, it nonetheless makes good progress on these thorny issues. For boat owners sailing between several European countries, questions of VAT and customs status often remain a headache. Varying controls at different ports, demands for old proof, different interpretations by different administrations, the subject regularly poisons ocean cruising and second-hand market transactions. The European Commission has published a doctrine note designed to harmonize these practices within the European Union. The document has been welcomed by the European boating industry and the European Boating Association, who have long been calling for clarification of the rules. The first important point in the text published by Brussels is that a pleasure boat used in the European Union is presumed to have EU goods status. In practical terms, this means that a yachtsman does not have to systematically demonstrate the European customs status of his boat each time he returns to port or after an international voyage. This clarification is aimed directly at certain situations that have become frequent in recent years. A number of yachtsmen had reported sometimes very strict controls after sailing to the UK, Turkey or the Caribbean, with requests for old documents that were sometimes impossible to produce. The Commission also points out that a non-European flag does not automatically mean that a boat is considered imported. The same logic applies to the owner's nationality or place of residence. In modern boating, these situations have become commonplace. A boat may belong to a British owner, be registered in the Cayman Islands, stationed in Spain, and regularly sail in France or Italy. This clarification is of particular interest to the European second-hand market. On some older yachts, proof of initial VAT payment or import documents have sometimes been missing for several decades. This lack of traceability has regularly created tensions during cross-border sales, particularly for units built before administrative dematerialization. Yacht brokers and mariners are now hoping for a more uniform interpretation of the rules in the different member states. Until now, some national administrations applied controls with very different levels of requirement depending on the navigation zone. Despite this publication, a number of questions remain unanswered. In particular, EBI highlights the difficulties associated with long voyages outside the European Union. The case of sailing yachts that have been around the world for several years remains particularly sensitive. After a long absence from European waters, some administrations may still require complex proof of the boat's customs status. Sailing between European overseas territories, the UK, the Eastern Mediterranean or the Caribbean also gives rise to a number of special administrative situations. Above all, the note published by Brussels is not legally binding. Each member state retains a margin of interpretation in the practical application of the controls. This is precisely what continues to worry yachting associations. Carol Patterson, secretary of the EBA, points out that the text does not completely resolve the historical problem of missing documents, when she said, "Even if the guide does not resolve the issue of missing receipts, it provides useful clarifications for a more consistent application of customs and VAT rules in the European Union." European nautical federations are now asking national administrations to apply these guidelines with greater proportionality. The aim remains to avoid the same boat being considered differently depending on the port of call or the administration encountered. For yachtsmen, this question goes far beyond the administrative framework. Divergent interpretations can temporarily immobilize a boat, block a sail, or complicate an international cruise. In a boating sector where cross-border mobility is the norm, this harmonization has become indispensable. The note published by the European Commission therefore marks an important step forward, even if several areas of uncertainty remain for long-distance sailors and certain professionals in the second-hand market. In our next segment, Ferretti Group secured 3 awards at the Blue Design Awards 2026 during this year's Blue Design Summit. The annual event, focused on yacht design, innovation and sustainability, brought together leading figures from across the international yachting sector to discuss topics ranging from coastal development and interior design to technological innovation and environmental sustainability. Ferretti Group brands Riva and Ferretti Yachts were recognized across multiple categories by the awards jury. The Ferretti Yachts 800 received the Best Motor Yacht Under 24 Meters Award. The Flybridge model, designed externally by Filippo Salvetti with interiors by IDI Italia, was recognized for combining contemporary styling with features typically associated with larger yachts. Up next, an investigation found risk assessments were not being followed after a deckhand was dragged overboard a potting and died off the Welsh coast last year. The MAIB published a safety flyer along with the report saying potting is one of the most hazardous fishing methods. The accident on board Willia was the 6th fatality on board UK potting vessels in the 20 months from October 2023 to May 2025, highlighting the vulnerability of fishermen operating in the sector. The report said there was a long list of similar accidents involving fishermen who have lost their lives after becoming entangled in shooting gear, highlights that potting is an inherently dangerous fishing method. The associated hazards require effective risk management to ensure safety and protect crews. Nearly half of the fatal potting vessel MOBs between 2013 and 2023 were due to a lack of physical separation between the gear and crew. On the morning of 1 May 2025, the potting vessel Willia departed the port of Milford Haven, Pembrokeshire, Wales in fine conditions for a day's fishing. On board were the skipper, a deckhand and a passenger. At about 13:30, the deckhand was dragged overboard after his foot became caught in a bite of rope while shooting a string of pots. The deckhand was wearing a personal flotation device, however, Its buoyancy was ineffective against the weight of the fishing gear and he was quickly dragged beneath the surface. Willoughby's skipper and passenger reacted promptly and recovered the deckhand on board, but he was unresponsive. The deckhand was transferred to a Royal National Lifeboat Institution all-weather lifeboat, the crew of which continued to provide emergency first aid. The lifeboat arrived at Milford Haven at about 14:57 and the deckhand was pronounced deceased at 15:40. His cause of death was later recorded as immersion in water. The investigation found that Willoughby's risk assessments were not being followed, and that the deckhand entered the water after becoming entangled in the running backline while repositioning the end weight attached to the pots. Willoughby used a self-shooting system to deploy its pots. However, due to the size, number, weight and stack height of the pots and the need to reposition the end weight, a deckhand was required to manually downstack each pot. Consequently, the system did not truly function as a self-shooting system and provide separation from the gear for the crew. Safety lessons include the following. There was no separation from the running gear for the crew working on deck, which put them at risk of entanglement, harm and injury. The crew did not adhere to the vessel's documented control measures during shooting operations which exposed the crew to a risk of harm and injury. The risk assessments had not identified all of the hazards associated with vessel operations, several control measures were not followed and others were not achievable. You can read the full report and safety flyer via our website. Next, the Marshall Islands Registry issued the revision of Marine Notice 2-011-57 in May 2026. It replaces the original December 2020 publication and aligns the requirements with the RMI Yacht Code 2026. The update applies across commercial yachts, passenger yachts, private yachts limited charter, and yachts engaged in trade, and turns several previous advisory expectations into clearer mandatory controls for recreational fire appliances. For captains, DPers, fleet managers, CEOs, and MDs, recreational fire appliances now need to be treated as controlled fire risk equipment, with clear installation standards, nearby extinguishing arrangements, ash and waste controls, LPG and ethanol safeguards, open deck fire pit precautions, and SMS-based risk assessment and operating procedures. You can find the Marine Notice online. For our next story, with only 3% of vessels that are 15 gross tonnage or less are inspected each year, Transport Canada has launched a pilot project to better oversee small Canadian vessels. This policy sets out to collect information on the physical characteristics of small vessels and the nature of their operations once they're registered with Transport Canada. The goal is to support more consistent, risk-informed decisions to improve how oversight resources are allocated. The pilot aims to support risk-informed decisions, use oversight resources more efficiently, and improve safety culture among small vessel operators. The policy for this pilot project is effective from May 13 to October 31, 2026. Once a vessel of not more than 15 gross tonnage is registered, the authorized representative will receive a form to provide information on the vessel's physical characteristics and the nature of its operation. The information Transport Canada collects will help TC better understand small vessels operating in Canadian waters, which will support risk-informed decisions when allocating oversight resources. This policy applies to non-pleasure vessels that register during the pilot project and that are not more than 15 gross tonnage. There are over 30,000 small commercial vessels registered in Canada, including about 13,000 fishing vessels, 10,000 workboats, 5,000 passenger vessels, and 1,200 tugs. Passenger vessels over 15 gross tonnage or carrying more than 12 passengers are inspected every year. Other vessels over 15 gross tonnage are inspected every 4 years. However, only about 3% of vessels that are 15 gross tonnage or less are inspected each year. This shows a gap between how oversight resources are used and where risks may exist. Through the Domestic Vessel Oversight Review under the Oceans Protection Plan, TC is looking for new ways to oversee small Canadian vessels under 150 gross tonnage or less than 24 meters long. To test a new approach, TC is collecting information about vessels' physical characteristics and the nature of their operations. This will help inspectors better understand small vessel operators in their region. You can find out more via iamscanada.ca. Next, an initiative to help the UK's marine sector become safer and reach decarbonisation goals has been launched. The UK Maritime Innovation Hub, a service of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency, will be providing coordinated access to regulatory engagement for organisations developing innovative maritime technologies. The core themes that the UK Maritime Innovation Hub will focus its regulatory engagement and support for innovation include maritime autonomous surface ships, decarbonisation, including energy efficiency and alternative fuels, digital systems and digitalisation technologies, and nuclear propulsion. You can find out more via www.iaams.org.uk. In our next story, French Nautical Industry Association Confederation of Nautical and Recreational Boating has released a national call for mobilisation against the country's tax on pleasure boats and personal watercraft, also known as the TAEMUP, whose amended version is due to enter into force on 1 January 2027. The CNP said in a statement, "This reform, conceived without any real consultation with stakeholders in the field, risks directly penalising thousands of boaters, weakening an already strained economic sector, and further alienating the French from recreational boating, which is popular, family-friendly, and accessible. The objective is clear, to obtain a rewrite of the text before 2027. The tax's revision has triggered criticism from across the French nautical industry. Under the current rules, the levy depends mostly on a boat's engine power expressed in HP and its length, and includes broad exemptions for small craft with low power motors. Under the TAEMUP's existing provisions, numerous entry-level boats are effectively excluded from the fiscal measure's scope. However, starting next year, the levy is to be based on a boat's engine power in kW, using a progressive and multi-bracket scale. This will effectively extend the tax's coverage to many craft that are currently exempt from it. The measure introduces discounts for electric and hydrogen propulsion, but its critics say the levy's main goal is not to encourage environmentally friendly boating, but to ensure additional budget revenue. Consequently, many small leisure boat owners will begin to be subject to a tax of several hundred euros per year. The Paris-based association is calling on the 6,330 companies from the nautical industry and services sector, 473 mariners, 1,500 training providers, 1 million licensed water sports participants, 4 million regular recreational boaters, as well as elected lawmakers from coastal and inland waterway regions to join the protest. Up next, more than 12 million Canadian adults participate in recreational boating every year, but preventable accidents continue to result in injuries and fatalities on the water. To help improve safety, Transport Canada is supporting education and awareness initiatives that promote safe boating practices and behaviours on the water. As part of the Safe Boating Awareness Week, the Honourable Stephen McKinnon, Minister of Transport and leader of the government in the House of Commons, announced a call for proposals under the Boating Safety Contribution Programme. The application period is open until the 21st of September 2026 and more information is available at TC's website. The programme supports organisations that promote safe boating practices, behaviour, and knowledge, improve access to national boating safety data, and help reduce deaths, injuries, and property damage from boating accidents. Through the Boating Safety Contribution Programme, Transport Canada will support organisations in delivering education, awareness and outreach initiatives that promote safe boating practices and behaviours, helping reduce risks on the water and prevent injuries and drownings across Canada. Quick facts. The Boating Safety Contribution Programme provides funding to eligible organisations to deliver education, outreach, and awareness initiatives that improve recreational boating safety practices, behaviours, and knowledge across Canada. Eligible applicants include Indigenous groups and communities, not-for-profit organisations, public safety organisations, educational institutions, healthcare institutions, enforcement services, and provincial, territorial or municipal governments. The programme funds up to 75% of total eligible project costs, to a maximum of $80,000 per project per fiscal year, for up to 3 years. Organisations have until the 21st of September 2026 to apply for projects beginning in fiscal year 2027-28. North American Safe Boating Awareness Week marked the start of boating season and highlighted the importance of safe boating practices, including wearing a life jacket, being prepared, making a sail plan, and boating sober. During the 10-year period, from 2012 to 2021, there were 896 recreational boating-related fatalities in Canada, according to the Drowning Prevention Research Centre Canada. In 80% of these cases, a life jacket or personal flotation device was not worn. And for our final story, the UK has become the first country to ratify the IMO Cape Town Agreement since the treaty reached full ratification requirements in February 2026. The agreement sets minimum international safety standards for large commercial fishing vessels operating on the high seas, covering areas such as vessel stability, fire protection, life-saving equipment, emergency procedures and radio communications. The Cape Town Agreement represents the fourth pillar in global fishing vessel safety, alongside the following key instruments, all of which are in force. IMO's STCW-F Convention on Training and Certification of Fishers. ILO's Work in Fishing Convention, 2007, which sets minimum requirements for work on board, including hours of rest, food, minimum age and repatriation. FAO's Agreement on Port State Measures to Prevent, Deter and Eliminate Illegal, Unreported and Unregulated Fishing, 2009, which seeks to combat IUU fishing through effective port state measures. The treaty now includes 29 parties representing 3,859 fishing vessels and will enter into force in February 2027. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.